Good morning, everyone. The State Affairs Committee will now come to order. Ms. Lexi, please call the roll.
Chair McClure.
I am here.
Vice Chair Caruso.
I am here.
Ranking Member Rayner excused. Representatives Alvarez.
Here.
Bartleman.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Buceta Cabrera.
Here.
Casello.
Here.
Escamani.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Gant excused. Griffiths.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Mooney. Persons Malika.
Here.
Porras.
Here.
Roach.
Present.
Robinson. Roth excused. Temple.
Here.
We have a call.
I guess we're all here. Good. Members in the audience and members of the committee, please make sure to silence your cell phones and other communication devices. Members in the public wishing to speak, please fill out an appearance form and get it to staff, and we'd love to hear from you. All right. Representative Soraya, I see you're here, so presumably you have a bill that you want to present to us. How about HCR 703, Balanced Federal Budget? You're recognized.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members. House Concurrent Resolution 703 applies to the United States Congress to call a constitutional convention for the sole purpose of proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States requiring the federal government to have a balanced budget. According to the Congressional Budget Office, the federal deficit for fiscal year ending on September 30th, 2023 was $1.7 trillion. Overall, the current national debt is approximately $33.84 trillion. The CBO projects that the national debt is roughly 97.3% of the gross domestic product. To be blunt, the nation's fiscal policy and rate of spending is unsustainable. Congress must take corrective actions now to spare our nation and future generations from economic turmoil. Mr. Chairman, this application is exclusively for the purpose of a federal balanced budget amendment and is revoked, withdrawn, and void if Congress attempts to count this application toward any other purpose. That is the concurrent resolution, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that great explanation. Members, we're on questions. Representative Bartleman in questions. You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Chair McClure. I've met with staff and gone over some of the your comment that the resolution would be null and void. There is no mechanism in the Constitution. They're going to convene, and we're going to show up, and there's no mechanism to have Florida leave the table in the federal Constitution. So how is that going to happen? Because you could support this, and then things that you never expected were on the table are, and because you were part of the number that got us there, you have no control over what they decide. So where do you feel we have a safeguard in your language?
You're recognized.
So our application for the purpose of having a constitutional convention is withdrawn, is null and void if Congress were to pursue other matters related to our call for a convention. So our concurrent resolution only counts for the specific topic of a balanced budget amendment. It does not. It is not applicable toward any other count on any other subject.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. But where in the federal government, in the Constitution for convening, does it say that? Because I would argue that what you're saying is not going to be true, that once it's convened, that's it. It's convened. And we were the vote to do that. So you may say, how are you going to make that happen? You're not going to unconvene the whole thing because you want to back out because it's not narrow in scope. So where in the U.S. Constitution is going to allow for that to happen, what you're saying?
You're recognized.
So Article 5 of the United States Constitution provides two methods for amending the Constitution. Congress can propose an amendment, which we've seen throughout our history. You also have an option for an application by two-thirds of the states, and then Congress must call a convention in order to take up the amendments that have been proposed. I won't argue with you that this is new territory for us, but the Constitution provides these two options for instances just like this. It's a perfect example. Congress has failed to act on this issue related to our unsustainable budget deficit. So what we are using is a tool that is available to us as a legislature to petition, to send in an application to Congress, to ask for them to have a convention related to about, I'm sorry, Representative. So as I was saying, this is one of the methods that's available to us under the Constitution to apply for a convention to be held. It is an extraordinary circumstance. I don't disagree with you there, but it is an action that is necessary to protect the future generations from the unsustainable budget deficit that we have.
Additional questions, members? Representative Escamani in question.
Thank you so much, Chairman, and great to see you, Rep. So what would be the impact of this ACR on Florida state budgets? Since Florida does receive an ample amount of funding from the federal government, how would a balanced federal budget per se impact us in Florida?
You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You know, that's a decision that I have to leave to Congress and the policymakers in Washington. What my concurrent resolution is saying is that our current budget situation in Washington, the current national debt, is unsustainable for future generations. We must get this budget and our fiscal house in order. The policy decisions that Congress will make in accordance with that balanced budget amendment is their realm. That's their responsibility. That's their job duties. I would hope, to maybe more fully answer your question, I would hope that they would look to states like Florida that do have a balanced budget requirement in place as an example of a way to set up trust funds, to create reserves, to make policy decisions related to tax cuts, fiscal policies, things like incontinence products that I know that you've championed before, tax cuts for our residents, placing our families and businesses in a position to succeed in a low tax environment. Those are policy decisions that Congress will be forced to make if we enact this amendment, which I do believe is critical for the future of our nation.
Thank you. Follow-up, Chair?
Follow-up.
Thank you so much. Does Florida currently carry any debt as a state?
You recognize.
Thank you for that question, Representative. I don't know the exact figures, but I know that in recent years, the governor has made a point of paying down Florida's debt obligation. But again, we do have a balanced budget in our state. The policy decisions that we collectively make are reflected in that budget.
Yeah, and I'd remind the committee, this is a policy conversation. It does obviously have a budgetary context, but it is on the policy, not the budget, or the federal budget, for that matter.
All right, thank you, Chair.
Additional questions?
Follow-up?
Follow-up,
Thank you so much. I can shift gears away from the budget then, though. I think those concerns stand for themselves. Just looking towards some of the concerns that Barlman brought up. So we've been receiving emails from constituents with concerns that an Article 5 convention could lead to serious threats of just our Constitution as a whole. And so could you cite for me where there are protections? I mean, you say that if there's a convention called, it would just be on one specific issue, but what are the, you know, explicit lines in our U.S. Constitution, or if there's federal law that says that's the case? Because the concern we're hearing from constituents is that this really is a Trojan horse for something much more insidious.
Okay. Representative Saroy, if you want to try for the third time to answer, and then if not, I think probably makes sense to have conversations offline to get comfortable, but let's give it a third go and see if we land it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my concurrent resolution is specific to Florida's application to Congress to call a convention for the exclusive purpose of a federal balanced budget requirement. Our application to Congress is null and void if Congress attempts to count that application toward any other purpose. So I would suggest to you that the safeguards that you're looking for, the concerns that your constituents have addressed to you, are resolved by the way that we have structured our application to Congress.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. Of the 28 states who have already passed resolutions calling for an Article 5 conference, how many of them have put similar parameters in their resolutions? And has anyone called for outside the scope of what we in Florida are doing? Because that's where the constitutional crisis is going to come in.
You're right, Agnes.
Representative Bartleman, thank you for the question. All I can say is applications have been made on a number of different subjects. I believe that the highest number of applications is regarding this subject, asking Congress to call a convention for the purpose of adopting a federal balanced budget requirement.
Follow-up question.
Thank you, Chair McClure, for indulging me.
Sure.
Okay, so then my next question goes to us putting a resolution just simply calling for a balanced budget without it reflecting what our values of a balanced budget would be. So part of my issue is we have a state full of people on Social Security using Medicare, using Medicaid. Most people prefer to take a approach where it's a where you have long-term goals. There's a timeline where you don't touch certain programs. But just calling for a balanced budget would mean that we couldn't say it, send aid to Israel if we were out of our money for the year. So how are you going to balance how, you didn't put any mechanism in here, it's just saying balanced, and that's it, balanced. But we're gonna have emergencies. We need to send money to help Israel. We need to make sure our seniors don't have a reduction in their Social Security. So your resolution doesn't protect any of that. Is there a reason why you left that out?
Representative Bartleman, I believe the simplicity of it is the point, but Representative Saroy, if you have additional comments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Two things that I would mention. First, the way that we have structured our application does recognize an emergency situation where there would have to be some provision made where spending a budget would occur outside of a balanced budget requirement in the event of an emergency. As far as the specific policies that you've mentioned, let me say this. Those are policy decisions that are for Congress to make. And we could spend the rest of the day, and it would be a fun philosophical exercise and a political exercise. We could spend the rest of the day debating different options, different policies, different ways to arrive at a balanced budget. What I am suggesting here is that this is the ask. It's Congress's responsibility. It's Washington's responsibility to make the tough choices. Part of the reason that we're standing here today is because they have not made the tough choices. So we're asking them to do that for the fiscal health of our nation and generations moving forward. You know, right now, today, the current budget deficit is $100,000 per person. That is unsustainable for this nation's fiscal health. It creates instability and uncertainty at home. It's viewed as a distraction abroad by our adversaries. We need to get this problem under control, and this is the tool that Florida has in its toolbox in order to make that happen.
Members, we're in questions. Additional questions. Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just want to go back to, you know, Article 5, U.S. Constitution, and I know we're beating this point, but I think the concerns are legitimate. Can you walk me through the two ways to add amendments to our U.S. Constitution?
I believe that's asked and answered, but yes. If you want to try it again.
Mr. Chairman, I feel comfortable that it's been asked and answered.
Okay. Where are we going, where are you trying to get to? Is it somewhere different than we've tried before?
Just one quick follow-up, Chair, if I may.
All right, you're recognized.
So my understanding, and I'm not a constitutional lawyer, so forgive me, but my understanding is that if two-thirds of state legislators call for constitutional convention, known as the Article 5 Convention, then there can be a ratification of changes. But this process has never been done before in our nation's history. And so who ultimately calls the delegates, I guess, is the question. Is it Florida or Congress that chooses the delegates?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think the beauty of this process, you say it's never been done before. The United States Constitution had never been done before in the history of the world, which is the beauty of the document. And I think it's worked relatively well. The two processes that you outline are correct in terms of getting a constitutional convention called. Florida does have statutes. To be respectful of the committee's time, I'm not going to get into the state statute. But there's also some consideration that Congress would preempt certain portions of that in terms of how delegates are appointed, where a convention would take place. That process that would be precedent. You know, we've never done it before, but there's a lot in the history of our wonderful country that we've never done before, and we've been trailblazers in that regard. I will tell you this, I feel that this is important enough and confident enough that I would suggest to you that we could host the convention here in Tallahassee, and my wife and I would put on the spread for them if they were willing to come to town and have it. It's that important an issue for our future.
Compelling enough for me. Additional questions, members? All right, we're in public testimony. And I think we have a little bit of a clerical cleanup. It's good now. All right, Timothy Martin, representing himself, is wishing to appear. You're recognized. You're hiding.
I was right there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tim Martin. I'm from Newberry, Florida. I'm a 10-year city commissioner of a very small agricultural mining town on the western edge of Alachua County, population of about 8,500 people. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm also the county Republican chairman in Alachua County. My main opposition to calling for the convention is that it does not effectively address the problem of federal overreach. I admit that it sounds good. I'd love it to be a silver bullet, but it actually is not. Frankly, when we extend lines, more net damage could be done, especially when unintended consequences are taken into account. Make no mistake, there are real pitfalls to convening a convention at this time. I realize this is not a popular position with some even among my own party, but it is not a partisan issue. Both sides of the aisle stand to lose should a convention actually be called. First, let me say that Article 5 does not give any definitive authority to state legislators to control amendments that are proposed. Article 5 states Congress shall. So there is no provision for the states to limit the convention to just a balanced budget or the term limits, which we haven't got to yet. It only gives the authority to call and then potentially, I say potentially, ratify what comes out of a convention if and only if Congress sends the amendments to the state's legislatures. Because Article 5 also provides another mode of ratification, and that is through a convention. Anyone could be in the ratifying convention. Donors, lobbyists, business owners, committee activists, anyone Congress deems sympathetic to the cause could be delegated as a representative to the convention. Warning signs should be going off in your head. The backstop of the state legislatures ratifying the amendments is often offered as a failsafe for proponents of a convention. I have just demonstrated one potential issue. The other is whether the three-fourths rule of ratification would actually apply. The last time a convention was called, 1787, was held, the ratification mode required a unanimous approval. But upon adjournment of the ratification convention, it was only 9 of the 13 colonies. Those are just some of the mechanical issues. Let me talk about the amendments themselves. The balanced budget simply means that the income equals the expenses. There is nothing to ensure that the expenses are actually lowered to the level of the income. It could be the reverse. Taxes could increase to equal the balanced budget or the expenses. Florida is a good example. We have debt. We have a balanced budget, but it does not limit spending. FY budget for 23-24 was $118 billion about. 10 years ago, it was 74. Still balanced, but still increased spending. So it doesn't address the issue. I would also add that the proposed BBAs have provisions in times of emergencies. Effectively, all bets are off. Given the federal government's recent desires for a climate emergency or COVID emergency, where would that leave us? One pen stroke away from an unbalanced budget, despite having a BBA in place. And what about term limits? District lines are drawn to ensure a measure of predictability. We all know it. If Nancy Pelosi was termed out tomorrow.
Sir, this bill is on the balanced budget. We're going to hear, the resolution on term limits is up next, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on that at the appropriate time.
Okay, I will do so. So here's a solution with two options. State legislatures, this is not the only option. This is not the only tool that you have in your toolbox. You also have the 10th Amendment. That gives you the authority to retain the rightful position casting off unconstitutional mandates. This is known as nullification or the doctrine of lesser magistrates. It has been done multiple times and provides a real check on federal power. Your check. DeSantis did this during COVID, pushing back against federal mandates, and several states have done this with regards to marijuana. It's a federally banned substance, but yet states nullify that and offer it. And the electorate holding the elected not following the Constitution accountable at the polls. The electorate needs sufficient understanding of their role and your role in the process and to stop delegating that responsibility, both of which are actually faster remedies than a convention process. So by way of example, and I'll close with this, when a player in a football game jumps off sides and commits a penalty or a personal foul, we know it's a penalty. Why? Because we know the rules. What happens to that player? Do we change the rules to suit that player? No. The player or the team is penalized. If it's bad enough, the player is actually taken out of the game. Same should apply in D.C., but that would require us to know the rules, to know the Constitution. Honestly, just not enough people know where the respective representative is offsides because they don't know the Constitution. The Constitution has all the proper checks and balances if it is understood and actually followed. I encourage the state legislatures to continue increasing requirements on lessons about our great constitutional republic, because it will serve us all better in the end. I invite you to take the opportunity to say no on both of these bills. I'm available for any questions as well. And I should remark that I think about 30 out of 31 states that have entertained a convention over the last 2 years have actually not passed them. So it's not a popular idea. Most states do not pass this. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Trish Neely, President, League of Women Voters, is waiving in opposition. Members were in debate. Members wishing to debate. Thank you, Mr. Martin. Oh, yeah. Someone have a question
for Mr. Is that for me?
No, we're in debate, sir. Thank you. You're recognized, Representative Escomani.
Thank you so much, Chair. This has been a very insightful debate, and I've learned so much about our U.S. Constitution, so I want to say thank you to the bill sponsor and to our speaker for enlightening us and sharing so much important feedback. You know, I do think the point needs to be stressed that the notion of federal expenses matching federal expenditures, matching federal revenue is a critical one, because what y'all might be unintentionally doing with this is actually raising taxes. Because if the federal government doesn't reduce their expenses, then someone's going to have to pay for all these different services the federal government provides, and that is going to be a harm to our constituents. And so I think you have to be really intentional in thinking about whether they're unintended consequences or clear consequences. We need to be really intentional in making that a part of our vote. I also asked about Florida's debt, because we do have debt as a state, and I have not looked at, you know, everyone's Form 6s, but I assume most of us here carry some sort of debt. I just got to get a new car this year, so I'm a lot less richer than I was. And so the reality is that, you know, yes, the federal government absolutely has plenty of efficiencies that they can pursue, but I think we also need to be embracing of the nuances of our own lived experiences, and of course, decisions that our nation makes that create the deficits that we face are often due to crises and emergency like the pandemic. With that said, I do have a continued concern that calling any type of convention is going to create a scenario where all of our freedoms and liberties are at risk. And there is no clear guidance that other issues will not be discussed at such a convention. There's not really clear guidance on who is called into that convention. And this nation is in a very precarious place. It wasn't that long ago that we had a hostile attempt to take over our democracy on January 6th. And so I think we need to be really intentional in having a sense of concern for the fragility of our democracy. The U.S. Constitution is a powerful tool that has protected us. I think we need to protect it as much as possible, which is why I do encourage us to, at this time, not support such ratifications. Let's focus on solving things like property insurance. Let's focus on solving problems for our constituents. I know we often have resolutions in front of us, and we kind of just think, no big deal. I like what the issue stands for. It's a value statement for me. I'll vote for it. But I really do encourage folks to look at this a little bit deeper, because it's much more than just a value statement. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Bartleman.
Thank you, Chair. I would just caution the members of this committee to be careful what you ask for. This has not been done before. You have no idea how the delegates are going to be selected, who they are. They are not accountable to the voters like we are. If balancing a budget was an easy thing, it would have been done under Trump and the majority party at that time, or under any Democratic president and the Democratic Party at that time. And it's only been balanced, I know it has in the past, but it's a very difficult thing to do. But basically, when you call this conference, we don't know who these people are who are going to be making these decisions, because there are no rules as to how the delegates are chosen. So the people who are elected, although we think they're ineffective at times, at least they are elected and accountable to some extent, where the delegates will not be. Number two, once you call it, you're asking to call it and convene it. That's what this is about. You can put whatever you want in your resolution that we're going to walk away, or we're only going to do balanced budget, but that's not what this is about. This is about simply calling something that we have no idea what it's going to look like and what they're going to do. So they may come in and say, we're going to cut Social Security. We're going to cut Medicare. We're going to have a balanced budget with no stopgap measures to help people. Then it's on us, because we're the people who said, let's do this great idea. Let's put a whole bunch of people in a room to make decisions for us without any parameters, without any accountability for them. We're supposed to reflect Floridians and what we want. And I can tell you, for me, with all of my senior citizens who have worked their whole lives, their whole entire lives, if you read the budget commission or any way to cut the budget, you're going to have to cut Social Security. You're going to have to cut Medicare. We don't want to cut the military. If it is truly a balanced budget, that means when there is no money in the bank, even if there is an emergency, you can't go back and say, let's take a loan. So because you're calling for something without any parameters around it, you don't know, you're saying it's going to only be this. They could put anything they want at this convention on the table. Their balanced budget may not reflect the values of any of us in this room. And I think it's very, very dangerous. I think it's a really bad idea. And I would urge everyone not to support this.
Representative Roach in debate.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you, Representative Soroy, for bringing this good resolution. I view this as an absolute body blow to check the unbridled and irresponsible spending of the federal government that future generations of yet unborn Americans and Floridians are going to have to pay for. And here we are again hearing this same trope about all of a sudden it's the end of Medicare, it's the end of Social Security, it's going to somehow end the military, and there are concerns about who these people are, what is the check. And I would remind people, if you're looking at the Constitution, that the ultimate check, the ultimate power rests with the people, and any such amendment would have to be ratified by the states. The people that we represent, that our congressmen and women represent, would have to vote on any proposed amendment to the Constitution. So to me, that is the ultimate check here. But yet again, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle always seem to be afraid to let the people vote on an issue and make those decisions for yourself. So I say, be not afraid. If we were going to embrace fear, we would still be governed under the Articles of Confederation, which we know did not work. So thank you for your leadership, and thank you for the state of Florida for leading on this issue. Let's go get them and deliver that body blow. Thank you.
Representative
Roy.
Alvarez in debate.
Representative Roy, I got to tell you, like most people, and I know what's forthcoming, most folks wouldn't have taken on the challenge of actually reading our Constitution and empowering the people of our country and our state to exercise their rights as written. You know, we hear about the fear of actually using the Constitution as written, and then we forget that the Constitution was written when a whole bunch of people that weren't elected got sent up by the states that represent them to this little thing called, you know, the Constitutional Convention, and then all of a sudden that very document was created. So, Mr. Martin, I want to applaud you for actually caring enough, even though I may not agree with you completely. It is excellent that we have citizens that still believe in reading and understanding the Constitution that guides them. I just want you to understand, I see this as one tool to help check the power of the federal government. That is, whether Democrat-controlled or Republican-controlled means nothing to me. This is about making sure that the freedom of our nation is still checked by the power which rests with the people and shall always so. So I'm completely in favor. Whatever those concerns might be that are expressed to me, that is the price of freedom and liberty as we have empowered the people of this country since 1776. So thank you, sir.
Members, I believe that concludes debate. Anyone else wishing to debate? All right, Representative Soroy, you're recognized to close on your resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee members. And I'll be brief in my close, but there are a couple of things that I want to touch on. You know, I think that it's important to remind committee members, based on some of the things that have been said, that, you know, while we're calling for a constitutional amendment on a balanced budget, ultimately Congress is going to have to make policy decisions related to how to enact that. We as voters will have an opportunity every 2 years, as we do now, to hold our members of Congress accountable through our vote for the decisions that they make in conducting our public business. So I think that that's something it's important to remind everyone of. The other thing that I would point out is we've been able to achieve this a few times throughout our history without having a federal balanced budget requirement in place. If memory serves correct, I believe Andrew Jackson was the first president to pay off the national debt. Calvin Coolidge, who we've heard a little bit in the news recently, was able to pay off through deregulation, through good policy decisions, was able to reduce our federal deficit by 25%. That was after FDR, I think, increased it by 500 or 600%. President Clinton was the last president, I believe, to have a balanced budget. George W. Bush realized a surplus and was able to return some of that money to the American people. We forget sometimes that the money is the people's money, belongs to the taxpayers of our country. So I think you have to put all of this into context. But what makes this situation different today is that our fiscal health, this continuation of spending, is unsustainable for our country. It is a grievous burden that we are placing on future generations. And you want to talk about a value statement. You're darn right it's a value statement. Families can't print their own money. Businesses don't have a blank check. So what we're saying here is it's time to put the same restraints on the federal government that American families and American businesses experience every day. And I want to leave you with this final thought, because I think for me it was very profound. I would encourage everyone to go spend some time looking up some of the studies and some of the speeches given by Governor Mitch Daniels. He's a former governor of Indiana, I believe a past president of Purdue. He referred to the federal deficit as the red menace. And he talks about how it's the gravest threat that our nation faces. I've spent some time reading that. I would encourage you all to do the same. Bottom line is, faith in our Constitution, faith in our fellow citizens, that we're going to work through these grave challenges facing our country. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Having closed on the resolution, Ms. Lexie, please call the vote.
Chair McClure?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Aye.
Bartleman?
No.
Black?
Yes.
Buchanan? Yes. Usada Cabrera? Yes. Caruso?
Yes.
Casello?
No.
Escamani?
No.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Gant, Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Horace?
Yes.
Rayner, Roach?
Yes.
Robinson, Roth, Temple?
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Lexie. Congratulations, Representative Soroy. Please show the resolution reported favorably. Have a great afternoon. Representative Barrero. Let's see if you can beat that.
I don't know if I can beat that, Mr. Chair.
You are recognized to introduce HCR 693, Congressional Term Limits.
Thank you, Chairman, Vice Chair, members of the committee. Members, in 1992, by a majority of more than 76%, the people of Florida amended our state constitution to impose term limits on the governor, the cabinet, members of the Senate, and this body. Term limits have shown that they work in the best interests of the people by providing more opportunity for new voices and new ideas to be heard and considered at the state level, and ensuring no elected official becomes so entrenched as an incumbent that he or she views that their seat is an entitlement. That's not the case, members of U.S. Congress. The same 1992 Citizens Initiative petition creating term limits for state offices, including term limits for those of Congress, but in 1995, the United States Supreme Court, they ruled that individual states cannot impose term limits on members of Congress. For these reasons, I filed this concurrent resolution. Concurrent resolution is an application to the United States Congress to call a convention for the sole purpose, I say sole purpose, of proposing an amendment to the United States Constitution to impose term limits on members of the U.S. Congress.
Having introduced the bill, members, were in questions? No way, Rep. Bartleman. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Is there anything in the Constitution that gives Congress or the Supreme Court to the power to tell conventioners what to do or not to do.
You're recognized.
So the states can individually call a convention by a two-thirds vote, and they can outline the scope of which that amendment would be limited to. In this case, it is limited specifically and only to term limits, and if additional subject matters were to be added to a convention, the language of this concurrent resolution would revoke it. So it's limited to only term limits, and the Constitution, I think a plain reading provides that states can call a two-thirds vote of the states a convention.
You recognize?
Yes, but the Constitution is also silent on who the delegates are, how they're chosen, and what amendments. So how can you guarantee that we're not going to call a convention? And by the way, the convention can have two sides of the coin, present amendments. How can you guarantee that they're not going to be runaway amendments? Are you telling me that the delegates, which have no process to be chosen, are going to get up and walk away if they go beyond the scope of what these two bills say?
Yeah.
You're recognized.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So specifically Florida statutes, if you look at Chapter 11, point 93, it specifically outlines procedures for calling delegates to an Article 5 convention. If Congress, however, were to outline the procedures for calling delegates, congressional procedures would prevail. So there is that procedure. And by operation of law, this House concurrent resolution would rescind its application if additional subjects were to be added. So if for some reason this could be used as some sort of a Trojan horse to include other subject matters that we don't want included in there, I would not want the repeal of our amazing, beautiful U.S. Constitution or any sort of rewriting. This would limit it only to congressional term limits, and that is the reason why we have revoked it, and prevented that sort of runaway subject matter being added to it.
Follow up.
So let's walk through that, how that's going to work federally, because once you have the number of states, it's called. So how are you guaranteeing that our Florida delegates are walking out of the room? Can you guarantee right now that that's going to happen? Because once you open the door and once it's called, and remember, other states have other provisions that they want to see have heard. So how are you going to guarantee to Floridians?
Rep. Bartleman, by my just rough math here, I think we're on between the two bills, the sixth attempt to have this line of questioning answered. It's been a consistent answer the entire way. Is there another area of the resolution you'd like to explore?
Chair, no, I apologize, but I think this is the most important thing because they're asking us to do something.
Fair enough, Rep. Bartleman.
Okay.
But hold on 1 second. I'm uncertain that if I gave you 600 opportunities to ask this question, the answer would change. I feel very confident in the responses of Representative Saroy and now Representative Barrero. They're very it's not a moving object. They've answered it. And so I don't know that the repetition is going to yield a different outcome. So for those purposes, can we try some other part of the resolution? You're recognized.
Thank you, and I apologize, Chair.
No apologies necessary.
I'm simply asking for a line in the Constitution. They're just speculating now as to what would happen. But I'm asking for a firm answer as to how it would happen.
You want to try it? We'll do it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I'll take a stab at it. I think, our Constitution and our judicial system offers us the opportunity to be able to challenge any sort of violation of the House concurrent resolution that we've established today. So if we see that they're calling up different subject matters that are in violation of this state law that we are passing here today, we can challenge it and we can make sure that they're not in violation.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. The Constitution of the United States does not give Congress nor the Supreme Court nor the judiciary any power to tell the convention what to do. That is very clear. So how are you saying we're going to exhaust the judicial process when there is no authority in the Constitution for that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Constitution provides the states the opportunity to call for a convention. By us calling a convention to limit it to this specific subject matter, congressional term limits, and revoking it, we have the force of state law to prevent it from going outside of that subject or outside of that scope.
Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks, you, Rep. Have there been other examples of states who have, passed something similar or maybe even different subject matter, but the same vehicle, if you will, where they revoked it?
You're recognized.
I do not recall off the top of my head if...
We can explore other states if offline. Or maybe now, Representative Escamani, we might get lucky here.
Your staff.
You recognize?
I believe that there are other states that have, have rescinded, but I can get back to you on that. I would say that that's not specifically, germane or binding upon the fact that other states have or have not on this decision. I think we still have law to protect us.
Follow-up, Chair?
You recognize?
Thank you so much. Reason why I ask is I'm just looking for examples to verify what you're saying, and it sounds like we might not have any. Shifting to like the policy subject at heart here, is there a recommendation of what the term limit should be in your resolution?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this resolution doesn't call for the specific number of terms. Rather, it just says that Congress would be required to call a convention for the specific subject of setting term limits. So they could set it out to maybe 3 terms for the House, 4 terms for the House, something similar that we have over here in Florida. They could hash that out and send the question back to the states for ratification. But, the fact of the matter is that we do need some term limits, and this gives the authority for Congress to call for it.
Thank you. Follow-up, Chair?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So they could do, for example, like 15 terms? And this would allow that to happen?
Asked and answered, Rep. Escamani. Additional questions?
Sounds like a yes. Okay.
First answer was a yes.
Thank you, Chair. One last follow-up then.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Does this impact gerrymandered districts? So districts that are designed to benefit a political party. Would this address that at all?
The bill. This bill just, or this resolution rather, just simply... calls a convention to have a discussion on term limits, not specifically anything within it. Are there additional questions?
No, Chair, I'm good. Thank you.
Representative Casella, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. My colleagues kind of exhausted the questions I was going to ask, so I'll pass. Thank you.
My man. You're recognized, Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much. How realistic do you think that Congress is going to impose term limits on itself?
To the extent you can... guess at how realistic anything the United States Congress does, Representative Barrero. Good luck and Godspeed.
Yeah. Can you please repeat the question? You said how? I didn't quite catch it. I'm sorry.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yes. I guess I'm just curious, with the language in this text, how, like, do you think Congress is actually going to impose, especially if they choose delegates, would they actually impose reasonable term limits on themselves?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I absolutely do.
All right, members, additional questions? We're in public testimony. Mr. Martin, welcome back. I know where you're going to come from, too, this time. Thank you again for being here.
I appreciate the indulgence.
I appreciate your input. Let's hear it.
Yes, sir. Well, the argument for the term limits is that it would replace the members after a due period of time, but... as we kind of touched on, the districts are drawn to create a certain measure of predictability. If Nancy Pelosi was termed out tomorrow, a constitutional conservative would not be elected in her district. Likewise, a representative from the Democrat side would not be elected in Matt Gaetz's district if he was to term out. Term limits should be something that's entertained by the voters themselves. I think term limits creates a measure of apathy among the electorate, thinking, oh, well, we'll just wait them out. We'll, they'll leave eventually. And I also think that it actually empowers the staff structure within the D.C. Beltway, knowing the members would be leaving as well. The answer to Mr. Representative Escamani's question is actually Oregon. They repealed their call for a constitutional convention earlier this year. I mentioned earlier about 30-plus states have actually entertained these over the last 2 years, and only one of them has passed it, 11 2 years ago and about 22 this year. The idea of term limits in the broader scope here is the fact that there is a lot of ambiguity. The ambiguity favors the very Congress that we are looking to rein in. So I'm not in favor of this. I encourage you to vote no. Again, I'm Tim Martin, City Commissioner from the city of Newberry, Florida.
Thank you. You have a question, Vice Chair? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Martin, you
yes,
indicated
sir.
That term limits would create apathy. and that we'll just wait them out and they'll be gone. Wouldn't it also create apathy in the sense that, if we didn't do it, that as we have currently, that the incumbent's going to get reelected no matter what we do. So why go vote?
Well, that's why we should encourage the. I'm sorry. That's why we should encourage the electorate to become more aware of this, and why I encourage the state legislature to, if not go to the level of mandating more constitutional classes within our K through 12 as well as our collegiate. Programs, much like we're trying to do at the University of Florida, and educate people about what the Constitution provides. There's plenty of checks and balances within the Constitution. We don't even need to deal with the term limits or the aforementioned bill either. The 17th Amendment took your power away to elect your senators. You should request that back. That's a real possibility. The 10th Amendment provides your immediate check on the federal government. Educating the electorate provides an immediate response to federal overreach. And we're not doing any of those things effectively at this time, and I would encourage you to try to do that. That's what I do in my all the time. This convention method could be years in the making. I don't think any of us will even be here by the time it actually comes back. And you're also, I think, under the false impression that it'll come back to the state legislatures. As I mentioned earlier, the second mode of ratification is a ratifying convention. Anybody could be put in those seats, not you or anybody that you're necessarily even aligned with, but it could be, like I mentioned, business owners, lobbyists, it could be community activists, it could be anybody. And I'm not on anybody's side here. I'm on the side of the Constitution, which I think is correct. And I think there's a lot of education that could be done. Respectfully, I'm hearing some just from the committee alone, we are a constitutional republic. Well, all due respect, we're not a democracy. Simple things like that that we could really certainly do. I'm happy to provide additional supporting evidence. My phone number is 474-1022. It's area code 352-474-1022.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Martin, do you have an idea of the percentage of incumbents that get reelected?
It's very high, unfortunately.
Do you know, is it in the 90 percentile?
I believe it's actually somewhere between 70 and 80%.
70 and 80?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
You guys seem to be getting along famously. I thought I'd let it go for a while.
All right.
I think we're answered on the last question, so let's ask another one.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Do you not believe in the process or the processes set up by the Constitution currently?
You recognize.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I love the process. I respect the process. I have misgivings about the people involved in the process.
Thank you.
Hear, hear.
And unfortunately, I think that's mostly Congress, which is, again, who we're trying to rein in here.
I appreciate your honesty. Representative Escamani, you recognize.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much for being here and your great expertise. You alluded to this. I wonder if you can dig deeper into how one of the consequences we see with term limits is the empowerment of those who influence legislature. And you mentioned, K Street in Washington, but could you maybe highlight more statistics, more specifics? Like, what does that look like operationally when experience is held among the lobby corps versus the lawmaker?
Well, unfortunately, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, this has never been done before, so we're all plowing new ground here, and we're all gambling on the Constitution that it would work out the way that we would speculate that it worked out. I've been on this topic and following this for probably over 10 years, and there isn't a whole lot of real history involved here. We did it once in 1787, and what came out of that, thankfully, was great, but let's look around the room, folks. There's not a lot of James Madisons and John Jays in the room. Sorry.
All right, Ms. Martin, we're going to keep it a little more on the subject. Do you have a follow-up or are you? No, he's finished with that one. Representative Fabrizio, you're recognized in a question. Very good. Members, we are going to move on in public testimony. Trish Neely, president of the League of Women Voters, is in opposition. Members, we're in debate. Oh, you're here. You want to speak on this one. I'm so sorry, Ms. Neely. You're recognized.
Thank you. Trish Neely, League of Women Voters. I'm a volunteer. I pretty much am going to echo what Commissioner Martin said, so I'll come up with some new text for you that's a little bit different. First, we're concerned about term limits themselves for our Congress, mainly because we feel like we've got a president that's pretty darn powerful, and if you start making changes to some of our congressional, giving them more difficulty to be able to stand up to a strong president, we feel that that's a problem. But the bigger concern that we have has to do with invoking Amendment 5, and I'll give you some quotes from our judicial system. I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. Whoa. Who knows what would come out of it? That was from Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. There is no effective way to limit or muzzle the actions of a constitutional convention. That's from former Supreme Court Chief Justice Warren Burger. And there is no enforceable mechanism to prevent a convention from reporting out wholesale changes to our Constitution and Bill of Rights. That's from former Supreme Court Justice Arthur Goldberg. I don't know that anything has changed since they all made those particular comments, and we just have a great deal of concern about something that's not happened since the 1700s, and we're concerned about doing it again. So we urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Members, we're in debate. This is their debate. Representative Roach, I think you had your hand up first. Rep. Bartleman, I saw you, though. We'll come to you next. You're up, Mr. Roach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Barrero. I'll just want to address a couple of the statements that we've heard both in committee and from some of the presenters, and I'm going to take them one at a time, and I'll make 4 points. The concern was brought up about how you need a Congress without term limits to stand up to a president. And I would argue constitutionally that the idea of one branch having a term limit and the other not is a violation of the separation of powers clause. The goal is to have the branches with an equal level of power and authority to act as a check on the other branches. And I think if the president should have a term limit, then the Congress should have a term limit. Either all should have term limits or none. Second point, I think it's the height of irony and hypocrisy that we're quoting Supreme Court justices who also do not have term limits, voicing their opposition to term limits. So I think that's an interesting point to make. And third, I want to address the point raised that we don't have any current John Madisons or John Jays. I would vehemently disagree with the statement that in a country now of 330 million people, we cannot produce people with the intellectual capacity equaling or surpassing the framers of the Constitution. And I would say one thing that modern day intellectuals or policy experts have that John Madison and John Jay did not have is now we have the benefit of 234 years of experience of seeing the Constitution operate in real time, in real life, that those framers did not. They simply had theory. And now we have 234 years of experience to look at what has happened with this great experiment. And I don't think we should shy away from making tweaks to it if we find a better way to operate this republic. And fourth, I would just come back to this point. This point to me above all others is that this fear of tinkering with the Constitution, I would remind everyone that any proposed amendment has to be ratified by 3/4 of the states. That's 38 out of 50 states in the union. That to me is the ultimate check on power here. If the voters don't like it, they do not have to vote for it. And that's a very, very high threshold to overcome. So if you get 38 states out of 50 to agree on anything, I think that's a Herculean effort, and if 38 out of 50 states agreed on an amendment, I don't see how you could say that this has not been tested by the people and put into effect. So those are the 4 points I wanted to make, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for indulging me. Thank you for bringing the resolution. I look forward to voting up on it.
Thank you. Rep. Bartleman.
Thank you, Chair, and I just want to thank both bill presenters. So term limits and balanced budget, that's in the headlines. That's something that people can relate to. It's something that people can identify with. But what people don't understand is that by opening Pandora's box, there is the threat of a runaway convention. that they're, you saying that because we put only these two parameters, we have parameters in our resolutions, it's going to stop everything. That may not happen. People can, there are no rules. They can take up whatever they want. And depending if this happens years from now, how would you all feel if you convened this Constitutional Convention and they decided we were going to protect women's reproductive rights? You would be regretting the moment that you agreed to do this because you're the state who added to the tally to get it done. So there is no limiting of what can be heard. There's no limiting of the influence of special interests once you open this door. There are no convention rules. Who's going to determine those rules? There are no rules. There was one in 1787 without any rules, and now we're going to open this up. And who's deciding the rules? Because contrary to what people think, the U.S. Constitution does not specifically state that Congress or the Supreme Court has the power to tell the conventioners what to do. As a matter of fact, you can say, we're just here for the balanced budget. And they can take it beyond all of that, and once the train left the station, you can't pull it back. They may have an appetite for more changes. There's the threat of legal disputes, which I don't know how they're going to dispute it, because there's nothing in the Constitution that gives you a clear path to disputing it. It is so uncertain, and I recognize that there's the possibility of unequal representation in this. I'm going to caution everyone once again, be careful what you ask for, because this is not a good idea. We have a system that works. Vote out your Republican or Democratic congressman if you want a balanced budget. Vote out your Republican or Democratic congressman if you want term limits. That's how our process works, okay? But to open Pandora's box and not know what you're going to get at the end of the day, that lays squarely on the shoulders of the people who vote for this. And this, the climate of this nation and the way we operate, and you think it's very, like, reflecting your values now, that could totally switch by the time this gets done. And you open this door. There are no rules. There is no way to curtail the parameters of that conference, no matter what you say. So I urge everyone to vote it down.
Thanks, Rep. Barberman. Representative Black, and then I think Representative Fabrizio, you want to speak? So, Rep. Black, let's hear it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank Commissioner Martin for coming out and for your lucid reasoning today. Although I will be up on this bill, I thank you for your comments. And I'd like to also thank members on the other side of the aisle for being such defenders of our Constitution. I must say that's quite refreshing. And I'd like to allay their concerns by just re-emphasizing what Representative Roach clearly enumerated himself. There is no Pandora's box to fear, since this would ultimately have to be ratified by the states, by a supermajority of the states. And if we really believe that some calamity could erupt from such a convention and be a Pandora's box, and that all of the people would suddenly be deceived and incompetent in a supermajority to right the wrong, well, then I offer to you that our problems are much, much deeper than we think. The Constitution has been well thought out. This process was put there for a reason, presumably because over the ages, it was expected that we might from time to time need to use it for things that were unexpected. And our founders never expected, I think, that our congressmen would become so entrenched that they would become kings of a sort. Congressmen are not kings, and we are the laboratory of democracy. Term limits have worked well for us, and it's time we share the antidote to congressmen kings through voting up on this resolution. And that is why I will be voting up on this measure. Thank you.
Representative Fabrizio, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep, for bringing this fine bill. I'll be up on it. I'll tell you,
thorough reading of the Federalist Papers indicate that term limits were something that they objected to at the time. However, the country has evolved, and the chief executive, the president, does have term limits. So why should Congress not have term limits here? I'm somewhat surprised, I guess I shouldn't be, at the parade of horribles that have been brought up by the members of the other side of the aisle about everything from balancing our budget. God forbid that we have a balanced budget. And God forbid we have term limits. God forbid that members who go up to Congress be there for a limited amount of time, get things done, and then get back to work as citizens of this country. I support your bill fully. Thank you.
Further debate, members. Representative Escamoni.
Thank you so much, Chair. I appreciate it. And thank you for entertaining our questions and providing your feedback, and to the speakers too. Big kudos and thank you. I'll admit, you know, when I woke up this morning, I was kind of like, all right, two resolutions, let's carry on. You know, then I learned some more about these concerns, and we're not, you know, pursuing a parade of horribles. We're just expressing unintended consequences for the body. That's the intention. And, you know, by no means is it an attempt to, say that is your intention, right? We're just speaking to the reality of the situation. This has never been done before. And there's a lot of risk and vagueness to the process, which is why even conservative Supreme Court justices have expressed concern about it, which is a clarity piece. It wasn't that the quotes being read were opposing term limits. They were just opposing a convention. I want to make sure that's clear. With that said, you know, the commissioner mentioned the importance of educating the electorate and building civic engagement. You know, collective efficacy is a critical component of this. If more people know what's in our Constitution, if more people felt like their vote counted, if more people felt like politicians cared about them, we would see not only greater engagement, but we would see greater turnover in Congress. I have no doubt in my mind that would be the reality. But when you have factors like gerrymandering, non-existent campaign finance laws, especially at the congressional level, you know, alongside apathy among voters, then you are going to see the status quo continue. And so if this body is very passionate about, for example, turnover in Congress, then we need to do more in not only educating our communities on the importance of voting, but we need to make voting more accessible. And we also need to ensure that there's integrity in that process, where there's transparency on who funds who. So voters have a better idea of who are the other actors in this process that don't often get that attention. So with that said, candidly, I'm kind of glad I have term limits because I'm a type A personality and I have a big issue. I have challenges letting go, as you can tell. So having a stop sign in front of me is actually very helpful. And with that said, you know, I see the pros and cons of the policy concept. I'm more just concerned about this flip of the switch where it can create an uncharted scenario where we have less rights afterwards. And the Constitution is an incredible document that has built out this beautiful experiment of the American dream. And I want to make sure it's protected for next generations. I don't want to risk that. So I'll be voting no on this. Thank you.
Representative Alvarez in debate.
You know what, Representative Burrow? I'm going to tell you to put it on my shoulders. So whatever the outcome of this is, put it on my shoulders. Because I, for one, thought that when I came here to represent 180,000 people that it was their will that governed me and not the other way around. So what it seems like what we're doing in this committee is we're saying, here's your government, right? Here are your incredible constitution, but we don't trust you to run it. We don't trust you to fix it. We don't trust you to be the ones. Let us tell you what's good for you. And inherently, that is the biggest perversion and interpretation I've ever seen. We are nothing. The people are everything. And we know that. And we're here to defend that until the very end. So I hear the arguments that there is no James Madison, but I got an Eric Miller. I got people who are ultra serious about defending the Constitution on a daily basis. That's an avid thinker, and he's not alone, right? You would say, well, who is, right, in charge of a Constitution? Well, it's the body politic. It's the people that got us there. We're not here because we're the best. We're here because we came to serve. And I think we're forgetting that it is not our government. This is a fleeting title.
In 8 years, God willing, I'm termed out, and I don't have the opportunity to come back here. It'll be the greatest honor of my life, but I will be Danny Alvarez, and you can let go of the representative. Who cares? Back to being a citizen, back to going to do my job. I did my job here, and we're done. So if it's such a threat to democracy to explore leading and examining the Constitution, then the only people that are threatened are politicians whose jobs are on the line, whose policies they might not be agreeing with. So ultimately, my brother, I don't understand the burden that you're facing, but I wish you luck going into the future. Mr. Martin, you're right one more time. If we really wanted to change the Constitution, we'd go back and just say, let's get the 17th back and start reelecting senators from our states, right? That was the greatest expansion of federal power after we gave away our Senate. But we had a process then, and we said we want to change it. And that was the will of the people. And the government that we have today is a reflection of the will of the people. After we let them, right? We didn't let them after we invoked the processes to change the Constitution. We might not be doing it under the methodology that everyone likes, but we're doing it under the way our founders allowed us to, and I commend you for trying. So thank you, sir. I'm up.
Further debate, members. All right, before you close, I just want to say this is probably one of the most spirited conversations we've had here, and I think that's indicative, first and foremost, of the folks that serve on here, but the Constitution, right? It's this beautiful framework that has allowed this country to prosper and be what it in all of its greatness. And so, yeah, we should spend over an hour talking about how we're changing it. And I like the fact that it got a little spirited. It should. It's an important topic. Thank you for bringing it before us. We're excited to hear your close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To those who are concerned about a runaway convention, let me just remind you that I'm here today in front of this podium because our founding fathers allowed it. They wrote something in the Constitution that has given us the opportunity, and given me the privilege to be able to propose an amendment to improve that Constitution. And our founding fathers actually embraced the idea of term limits. Under America's first Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, representatives actually had term limits imposed on them. They were limited to 3 terms to any 6-year period. Here are a few of the opinions from our founders. 1789, Thomas Jefferson proposed term limits, urging a limitation of tenure. He said it was to prevent every danger which might arise to American freedom by continuing too long in office the members of the Continental Congress. Richard Henry Lee, signer of the Declaration and a founding father from Virginia, he said that a lack of term limits was most highly and dangerously oligarchic. George Mason, a founding father and delegate to the Constitutional Convention and known as the father of the Bill of Rights, he said nothing is so essential to the preservation of a Republican government as a periodic rotation. Why then were term limits not included in the Constitution? Many scholars actually contend that they were not included merely because the Constitution was intended to be a short document and that going into term limits would be just going into too much detail. In other words, it was left out just to keep the Constitution concise as it was intended to be. Others, however, they do contend that it was left out because it just wasn't popular enough, which is actually not surprising. I'm actually still aligned from one member of Congress who said, getting members of Congress to vote on term limits is like getting a turkey to vote for Thanksgiving. Yeah. Whatever the reason, it is incumbent on us today to pass congressional term limits. Representative Nancy Pelosi has been in Washington for 36 years. It's longer than I've been alive. Senator Chuck Schumer has 42 combined years of uninterrupted legislative tenure. The longest serving senator is Chuck Grassley with 48 combined years of service in the House and the Senate. Of the top 120 longest serving representatives and senators, all who have served over 35 years, only 6 of them actually lost their election. That makes a 95% reelection rate for incumbents. But it wasn't always this way. For the first 80 years of our country, few members of Congress served more than 2 terms, and that's a fact. However, this changed after the Civil War when Congress created permanent committees. They chaired them with members with the most seniority. And from then on, the longer a congressman served, the more powerful he became, the harder it became to defeat him. According to the Congressional Research Service, the earlier part of our nation's history saw the average length of time for congressional service was only 2 to 3 years and 3 to 5 years for senators. Today, only about 13% of Senate representatives do not seek re-election. Or put another way, only 4% of representatives who seek re-election are actually defeated. This is a bipartisan issue. I'll give you a poll result from McLaughlin and Associates. 82% of Americans want congressional term limits. That includes 89% of Republicans, 76% of Democrats, and 83% of independents. And if you break it down by race, 72% of Hispanics support term limits, 70% of African Americans support term limits. And if not having term limits were such a good idea, why then would Congress consistently have disapproval ratings of over 70% and 80% year after year? Currently, the approval rating of Congress is at a dismal 13%. 60% of Americans say they would fire every single member of Congress if they could. That's because they know that Washington is broken. The most common argument opposing term limits you will hear is experience. You will hear if somehow your congressman has decades and decades of experience, then somehow he's going to be able to solve all of our problems. Well, let me ask you, why then do we have $33 trillion in federal debt? Why then do we have a broken immigration system? Why then do we have a bloated federal government that's now the largest employer in the entire country with 3 million employees? To put it in perspective, that's more than McDonald's, that's more employees than Amazon, that's even more employees than Walmart. You've heard it argued before from members of Congress, if they don't want me there, then why do they keep reelecting me? Well, let's tell the truth here. Incumbents continue to get reelected. It's not because voters like them so much. It's because they have all these unfair advantages. Incumbents get $9 of special interest and lobbyist donations for every $1 that challengers get. Obviously, incumbents have years and decades of name recognition that challengers don't have. And like I said earlier, congressional incumbents, they literally have 96% reelection rate. So why do we need term limits? Term limits allow for new members with bold and fresh ideas to tackle the problems of our day. I doubt that if there were no term limits in Florida, that many of us would actually be sitting here in these committees here today. We cannot fix a broken DC with the same people who created the problems in the first place. Term limits would also put the necessary pressure on Congress to actually get things done instead of continuing to kick the can down the road year after year after year. And term limits, plainly, they prevent too much power going into the hands of just a few individuals. Members, our founding fathers, they never envisioned a body of representation that made professions of public service. Our founders intended citizen statesmen, not career politicians. You go to Washington, you get the job done, you go home, and you be like everybody else. Our founders never intended for the people to serve the legislators. They intended the legislators to serve the people. And this undoubtedly is at the fabric of our story as an American people. Our country, we did not embrace oligarchs. We fought them. We never established kings and queens. We actually defeated them. And we never surrendered our rights to the government. Rather, we gave up our lives to limit it. Thank you.
Having closed on the resolution, Ms. Lexi, please call the vote.
Chair McClure?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Here, yes.
Bartleman?
No.
Black?
Yes.
Buchanan? Yes. Quesada Cabrera? Yes. Caruso?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Escamani?
No.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Gant? Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Horace?
Yes.
Rayner? Roach?
Yes.
Robinson, Roth, Temple?
Yes. By your vote, show the resolution, report favorably. Congratulations, Representative Barrero. Members, I believe that's the show. Seeing no further business before the committee, Chairman Buchanan moves. We rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.